It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
Socialization of transportation, education, energy, housing, and water. What it means is that government controls it through rules and regulations.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
Under this guise of bipartisanship and nonpartisanship, it's actually tapped down the truth.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
On an equal field in the battle of ideas, mistruths or misconceptions, and it is getting us into a world of hurt.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson, and happy new year to all of you, and thrilled to have in studio with me Ben Martin. We're going to be finishing up the Federalist Papers. It has been so fun having you in studio to do this.
Well, it's been my privilege, and it's been a distinct pleasure to do that too, Kim. So thank you very much for having me for this whole year and for giving us the opportunity to share that with your audience about the Federalist Papers. Fantastic.
Well, you have such a love for our history. You're a patriotic historian, former Army Ranger, and this show is brought to us by the Harris family. I want to say thank you to them for bringing this show to you every month. Because we need to know why we believe what we believe, Ben, if in fact we can engage in this battle of ideas that is raging in America today.
You're so right, and I also want to thank the Harris family for allowing us to do this. It's been a real distinct privilege and a great pleasure to do this.
Well, definitely. I cannot believe that that the year is almost over, and here we're looking at 2020. But, Ben, as we look at these issues each day on the show, we look at them as freedom versus force. Force versus freedom. Americans, we like freedom. And socialism ultimately comes down to force. It's never compassionate to take other people's rights, their property, or freedom via force, whether it's with a weapon policy or unpredictable and excessive taxation. If something is a good idea, you shouldn't have to force people, right?
That's exactly right. And then, you know, when you talk about that, we talk about freedom, but we should talk about liberty, too, because that's what the founders believed. They didn't believe in just freedom. They believe in the responsible exercise of freedom, which they called liberty.
Right. Freedom, liberty is not just you get to do whatever you want to when you want to. There is discipline involved in that. And so liberty is the responsible exercise of freedom. And as we're coming in on the end of 2019, 2020 is right around the corner. I want to say thank you to this team that I get to work with, Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, and Charlie, for your support and your good work. And Steve, I'm excited. Who knows what 2020 is going to hold, but it's going to be a raucous year, and we're ready.
I just hope it doesn't go near as fast as 2019. I mean, and I talk about this with other people. We all had the same viewpoint. It says, at best, it feels like it might be September.
And at best, I get it.
I also want to thank Steve for all his great support throughout the whole year.
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank you too, Ben. And just now, I was sitting here mulling over that distinction you just made, freedom. You know, versus liberty. Mm-hmm. In terms of flushing it out and defining it, we all know that there's too many people running around who they want their freedoms, but they don't have a clue
about the responsibility,
the liberty part.
Yeah.
Huh?
And we have to remember, and it comes out of the Federalist Papers, that responsibility is an American word, and it was started with the discussions in the convention and in our Federalist Papers. That was where it was first used.
I did not know that.
There you go.
We're going to learn some more nuggets of wisdom today, for sure, since Ben Martin is in studio.
You can read that in the introduction of the Federalist Papers, too.
Okay. I have my copy right here.
There you go.
Since you're here. So
yours looks pretty beat up, too.
It's getting pretty beat up. I'm going to work some more on that this holiday season, for sure. But I also want to say thank you to each of you listeners out there. You are treasured. You're valued. Today, strive for excellence. Take care of heart, soul, mind, and body. We are Americans, and it's important that we remember that. So be sure and check out my website, kimmunson.com. Podcasts of the show are there. It's now really easy to see where they are. You can click on that. And our wisdom / inspiration today, James Madison, he was one of the authors of the Federalist Papers. And he said, it is of great importance in a republic not only to guard the society against the oppression of its rulers, but to guard one part of the society against the injustice of the other part. And again, I'm going to say that one more time. It is of great importance in a republic not only to guard the society against the oppression of its rulers, but to guard one part of the society against the injustice of the other part. That's James Madison. He lived from 1751 to 1836. He was an American statesman, lawyer, diplomat, philosopher, and founding father, and he served as the fourth president of the United States of America. That was James Madison.
And he covers that in great detail in Federalist Number 10 when he talks about faction.
Faction. There's a lot of that going around these days.
Certainly.
Okay, Steve, are you ready for the funnies?
Always.
What is a New Year's resolution? It's something that goes in one year and out the other. Okay. Youth is when you're allowed to stay up for New Year's. Middle age is when you're forced to.
And at the senior level, you can't.
Yeah, you're right. And lastly, what do New Year's parades have in common with Santa Claus? No one is awake to see either of them.
Good stuff.
Those are good ones. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so for your New Year's Eve party, or if you're having people over today, Hooters restaurants can help out. Wings spice up any holiday party, and you can shop Hooters for their holidays. They have their 2020 Hooters calendar. It's a gift that you can actually have that sent over to our troops overseas. And they say, eat, drink, and be merry with Hooters. Place your catering order now. I would suggest that you do that immediately, and so that will arrive for either tonight or tomorrow night. And they have a variety of party platters. And Hooters Restaurants is a valued partner of mine. We have quite a story on that, and we'll be having that on the website very soon. And so thank you to them, and be sure and drop by. Secondly, in just about a week is our next Stand for Colorado rally. It's January 8th. It's the first day of the legislative session, 11 o'clock on the west steps of the Capitol. We have this amazing Women of the West. These are dynamic women. Go to StandForColorado.com. You'll see the complete list of speakers there. And please join us. We need to let this legislature know that we are watching and we care. Last year, they were out of control on the things that they passed. And so be sure and show up. And then on January 13th, Helen Raleigh, who immigrated from China, and Dr. Paul Prentice are presenting at our salon series, The Punches to Knock Down Democratic Socialism. That will be Monday, January 13th, 5 to 8 p.m. at Water's Edge Winery in Centennial. And check out my website. You can sign up there. And as we're looking at the end of the year here, I do want to say thank you so much to all of my sponsors. As you know, I'm an entrepreneur. I buy my time. And what that means is I have full journalistic control, but it also means that I find my own sponsors. And each of these people I would highly recommend. Karen Levine with RE/MAX Alliance, Jason McBride and John Buckingham, Presidential Wealth Management, Hooters Restaurants, Susan Kochevar with the historic 88 Drive-In Theater, the Harris family, who's bringing you the Federalist Papers, Liberty Oilfield Services, Jay Davidson, First American State Bank, Lauren Levy with Polygon Fi, answering all your mortgage questions, Water's Edge Winery, Liberty Toastmasters, Chris Cantwell with Trans World Business Advisors, and Complete Colorado. And I wish each of them a very prosperous 2020. So, Ben Martin, I think it's probably time. Let's go ahead and jump into the beginning here of the end to finish up the Federalist Papers. Let's talk about Federalist number 84.
Right. We're going to talk about 84 and 85 today, and 84 is... it's stuck in there. When we started this and we talked about the overall outline of the Federalist Papers, and there were six distinct parts to the Federalist Papers. And we'll talk more about that when we go into the summary a little bit. But so we have been through four of the six, and we have two papers left to finish the other two parts. Now, the parts before the fourth one, which we've been on for the last few months, which is, we will talk about, that's the most important one. And that one, the name of that one is The Conformity of the Proposed Constitution to the True Principles of Republican Government. And this is what drives me crazy when I listen to all of the folks on TV and the radios talking about our democracy. It is obvious that through all the things that the Federalists and the Framers said, that we do not have a democracy. They disdained a democracy, and we'll talk about that in Federalist 10 that we talked about earlier today, of James Madison. And then we're going to talk about that, about what they thought was bad about a democracy and why they chose a republic. And there are several instances of that in here. So we're going to talk about that. But if you look at the Federalist Papers, and we'll talk about that again, more than half of the Federalist Papers talk about the conformity of this proposed Constitution to the true principles of Republican government. And why we can't understand that, and why some of our most intelligent guys, some of our conservative guys, don't speak of that, just drives me crazy.
You know, same here. You know, I served on city council for 4 years, and I was astonished. Attorneys, people that should know that this is not a democracy, that we are a constitutional republic.
Correct.
But you even see this as particularly even in these impeachment hearings, that you'll see people talk about our democracy, a democracy. The founders realized that there was such danger with a democracy because then you can have the tyranny of the majority.
The majority. That's exactly right. And you have to have a constitution. And we're going to talk about that. In 31, we talk about that quite a bit. In 10, we talk about that, of course. And we talk about it throughout that. The founders, the framers and the founders kept talking about that over and over and over again. And there's a big difference, and it sort of goes back to liberty being the responsible exercise of freedom. In a democracy, you know, you have the will of the majority, the tyranny of the majority. So if you have the most votes, and you're seeing that right now in this impeachment exercise or sham that we're talking about right now, where you have a majority and you're using that power to do things that really aren't in conformity with the Constitution.
Here's that word. And okay, I was thinking about that word conformity, so that makes sense. It's not within conformity of the Constitution.
That's right. And if you remember when we talked about 78, when we were talking about the judicial part, the judiciary, we talked about, and we talk about that in great detail, and that if anything that's not in the conformity, it's not does not conform to the Constitution, is void. It is not valid. And that they say that in those exact words in 78. And we're not doing that right now.
Oh, my gosh. You know, there are so many things that are happening these days that are not in conformity with the U.S. Right. Constitution. But I am encouraged, Ben Martin. There seems to be a resurgence of interest in the Federalist Papers. People, I think, are starting to wake up. We need to know why we believe what we believe. So, Ben Martin, let's go to break. When we come back, let's talk about Federalist number 84. There were 85 essays. Let's talk about 84. This is Kim Munson in studio. It's patriotic historian Ben Martin. We'll be right back.
A reverse mortgage can be an important financial tool for individuals 62 and older. It is essential to understand the process so that all of your questions are answered. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy, Polygon Financial Group, has the experience to answer your questions. Lauren knows that each financial transaction is personal. If you'd like to explore your options on a reverse mortgage or with rates down, explore options to remodel your home, buy a rental property, or move, call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup.
At Hooters, you can watch the games with all your buddies. And when your buddies are the world-famous Hooters girls, there's always plenty of ice-cold beer and those craveable wings that'll knock your taste buds into next Tuesday. Hooters girls know plenty about football, but we really know the fans who live for it. So hang out with all your buddies all season long at Hooters, your official hangout for game day.
Catch all the games at Hooters and enjoy a Bud or Bud Light draft with 10 boneless wings, just $10. Dine for two with the pitcher and nachos, just $20.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Be sure and check out my website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. And you can email me at Kim@KimMunson as well. And be sure and sign up for our newsletter. Also, take a look at StandForColorado.com. We will be meeting in just a little over a week, January 8th, 11 o'clock, on the west steps of the Capitol. It is important. We are Americans. We are Coloradans, and we need to show up. But let's continue on here. I have in studio with me former Army Ranger, patriotic historian Ben Martin, and we have been going through the Federalist Papers And this is our final show on that. And there's 85.
85.
And we're going to talk about number 84 right now, Ben.
Number 84. Number 84 has its own special subcategory in number 4, the part number 4, and it's miscellaneous objections. And so in this, he talks about, hey, we have these objections. He said, I told you in number 1 that I was going to talk about all the important objections you have and kind of give you a reason why they're there, and to try to explain why they're in the Constitution and to try to placate your feelings about these objections. And the first one, the biggest one of those objections is the lack of a Bill of Rights in the proposed Constitution. Because, as you know, many of the state constitutions had Bills of Rights in them. And so he's going to talk about those in great detail. So he says, in the foregoing review of the Constitution, I have taken notice of and endeavored to answer most of the objections which I have heard against it. This is Publius. However, there remains a few which either do not fall naturally under any particular head, and or were forgotten in their proper places. These shall now be discussed. But as the subject has been drawn into great lengths, I shall have so far to consult brevity as to comprise all of my objections on these miscellaneous points in a single paper. And that's this one right now. And so there are 5 objections, and I'm going to go through them really quickly.
Okay.
First of all, there's no Bill of Rights. That's objection number 1. And then the second one is no provisions declaring liberty of the press. And the third is the seat of the new government is too remote from many states. And the fourth is the rejection of the debts due to the United States, which is kind of a funny one. And then the new government will be considered more expensive as the fifth objection.
Interesting.
So let's talk about the first one. And then when he talks about that, he said the most considerable of these remaining objectives is that the plan of the convention contains no Bill of Rights. And he says, as Publius approaches this objection from several perspectives, he begins by noticing that the proposed Constitution already projects a number of important rights, including the guarantee of habeas corpus, the prohibition against ex post facto laws, and that unlike the rights proclaimed in the New York Constitution, which is the one that he's shooting at, he said the rights in the proposed federal Constitution are not alterable by simple legislation. And that's really important. And he talks about that in Federalist 31. And we'll talk about Federalist 31 again in the summary. And he says that we observe that a Bill of Rights, according to the primitive signification, are grants of privilege from the sovereign to the people, abridgments of prerogatives in favor of privilege, and as such, have no place in republican government founded on the consent of the people. And that's really important. He did not believe that we needed a Bill of Rights.
You know, Ben Martin, the first time I heard Tom Krannewitter say that some of the founders thought that we did not need the Bill of Rights, I was a bit astonished because I, you know, kind of hung my hat on the Bill of Rights.
Right.
But the reason is they thought that the Constitution already guaranteed that, right?
It does. And that's what he says. And so there's some really very good quotes in here. So we'll talk about, he says, we the people, and that's in quotes in big letters, of the U.S. to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish the Constitution of the United States of America. Of the preamble, he declares, this is a better recognition of popular rights than volumes of those aphorisms which make the principal figure in several of our states' rights. Our states' constitutions is what he's talking about. He goes to maintain that the Bill of Rights, in the sense and to the extent that they are contended for, are not only unnecessary but would even be dangerous. They would, he argues, contain various exceptions to powers not granted, and on this very account would afford a colorable pretext, a specious pretext is what colorable means there, to claim more than were granted. There remains but one other view of this matter to conclude the point. This is very good. The truth is that after all the declamations we have heard,
that the Constitution is itself, in every rational sense and to every useful purpose, a Bill of Rights. And that the proposed Constitution, if adapted, will be the Bill of Rights of the Union. So at this time, he is totally against having a Bill of Rights for those particular reasons. Now, later on, he goes on to realize that that from all of the objections that are out there in all of the state conventions he's talking about, that the Constitution will not be ratified unless there is a Bill of Rights in it.
Okay, now it's Hamilton who's writing in 84, and for our listeners, I'm sure you know this now, but they use the pseudonym of Publius.
Publius, yes.
Okay. But realizing that they would need that for ratification, I find it interesting that they said to the different states, we will come up with a Bill of Rights once this is ratified, and they trusted each other.
That's
it was
right.
Ratified, and then Madison made sure that it happened. I find that absolutely amazing. That
the reason it was so important, he had to fight for an election to become elected to the House of Representatives so that he could fulfill his promise that was made during the ratification process, that he would, in fact, put a Bill of Rights before the Congress and make sure that it was ratified so that it would be part of our Constitution.
So it was not a slam dunk. So
he had to work really hard to do it. And he had to run against James Monroe for that congressional seat in Virginia, the 5th District.
Okay. I did not realize that.
Those are a little bit of tidbits there for you, but they're really important ones.
Most definitely. You always get something great here when Ben Martin is in studio. So continue on.
So let you know that he was against it, but he worked really hard to make sure that they were in there.
And he kept his promise.
And he kept his promise like he always did. And he was the only one, as you remember, that when Washington told them that the convention was going to be sacred and it was going to be secret and that you would not be able to share that with other people, he kept that until after his death. His notes on the Constitution, which are the most comprehensive of all, were not released until after he was dead.
Wow.
And so that's really keeping your promise. The second one is no provisions declaring liberty of the press. And I'm going to go really to talk about this is pretty important, and I'm going to go all the way to the bottom and say that he wanted to say a remark or two about this concerning this in the next state, but this is what's really important. When he says, what signifies a declaration that the liberty of the press or any liberty in that matter shall be inviolably preserved? What is the liberty of the press? Who can give it any definition which would not leave the utmost latitude for evasion? He said, I infer that its security and any liberty's security, whatever fine declaration may be inserted into any constitution respecting it, must altogether depend on public opinion and on the general spirit of the people and of the government. And here, after all, as is intimated upon another occasion, and those other occasions are in Federalist 22 and Federalist 37, he said, intimated upon another occasion, we must seek for the only solid basis of all of our rights, and we know that to be the consent of the people.
Wow.
And he said, so we talk about that. And then I want to go on really quickly to the fourth objection, where he says, rejecting the debts due to the United States, and this is funny, he says, among the many extraordinary objections which have appeared against the proposed Constitution, the most extraordinary and the least colorable one is derived from the want of some provision respective to the debts due to the United States. The suggestion is entirely void of foundation, and it is the offspring of extreme ignorance or of extreme dishonesty. I shall only observe that it is a plain dictate of common sense, So it is also an established doctrine of political law that states neither lose any of their rights under the proposed Constitution, nor are they discharged from any of their obligations by a change in the form of their civil government. They were trying to get out of the debts that they owed to the United States.
I love it.
It's really funny, you know.
He says, void of foundation.
That's
a nice way to say, are you crazy?
Exactly. And that wraps up this segment right now, and that'll be a good time to wrap up the 84.
Okay, great. So that was Federalist 84. We have one more, Federalist 85. Ben Martin is in studio. This show is brought to you by the Harris family. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll do Federalist paper number 85. We'll be right back. Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management. These conversations with Ben regarding the Federalist Papers, they're just so rich, you know, and we've been attending Vino and Veritas. I have learned so much about the Federalist Papers there as well. Do you have any takeaway of something that you've really learned through all this?
You know, it's interesting that Ben and then Dr. Kranowitter, who both kind of study the Federalist Papers, each has a little bit different way of going about speaking about them.
Mm-hmm.
Ben is very straightforward. He is so good at bringing up the concepts. It's, wow, I never really thought about it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Kranowitter is fantastic at I think what he's done is he brings up the struggles that the founders had with almost everything they were trying to do with the Constitution, to think about what the side effects might have been, how to deal with it, and how it was a very, very difficult process for them to try to decide if they were imposing on people's freedoms unintentionally or not. But Ben's great. I always love when he's on your show, Kim. I've heard him at the Douglas County Republicans meetings, and then I always think that he's the star of the show whenever he's there. Did you hear that? He's the star of the show.
I think that whenever he's there. We should have him there more. That was subtle. That was very subtle, Jason McBride.
Was it?
Yeah, very subtle.
I didn't think it was that subtle.
So, but hey, before we go to break, you know, we did a show last week on the Santa stocks, which I find just fascinating. I love that kind of stuff. And people can actually get a copy of that.
Well, they can. We try to do a report with some good info on those. There's six stocks that, I think have some decent characteristics, not recommendations, but you can get your report on the six Santa stocks for 2019 for informational purposes or to do your own research or just for enjoyment, if that's all you want.
Yeah, I think, you know, as we're getting into the new years, I think it would be fun to actually download that. And if you have friends over or family over for New Year's Eve or New Year's Day, I mean, I think it'd be fun to just sit around and talk about them
a little bit. Well, I think it's better to argue about that than other things,
Politics or religion, huh?
Or if you don't have anything to argue about, now you do.
There you have it.
So there we go. But you can get your free copy at airpresidential.com. Kim, you're nice enough to let us have it on your site as well. So you can also go to kimmonson.com. Or as you love to say, give Natalie, you always give out her phone number every day. At the switchboards at 7:30, that's 303-694-1600. And she'll send you a hard copy the old school way.
I love it. So Jason McBride, Happy New Year. And we will talk to you tomorrow.
Sounds great.
Are you looking for news, not propaganda? Ready for a news source you can actually trust? How about a news site that doesn't want to sell you a subscription? Visit CompleteColorado.com to see all the latest news from around Colorado. Complete Colorado's staff scours news sources from around the state and nation to bring you only the top stories that affect you right here in our great state. Updated three times a day, CompleteColorado.com has full-time reporters doing original investigations and reporting like newspapers used to do, as well as opinion and political commentary from a variety of Colorado voices. And CompleteColorado.com is the only place to read columnist Mike Rosen. Always fresh content, always free, always informed. CompleteColorado.com, your complete source for Colorado news.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmonson.com. That's Kim, MONSON.com.
My country 'tis our
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson, and I'm having a conversation with patriotic historian Ben Martin regarding the Federalist Papers. Thank you to the Harris family for their sponsorship of this show. We are at the last one, Federalist Paper number 85. Wow.
So what I have to tell you about number 85 is that when Hamilton or Publius started in number one and he gave an outline of what the Federalist Papers would be, he broke it down into six parts. He put three parts in volume one, which was called The Utility of the Union, and he put three parts into volume two, which took the name of the conformity of the proposed Constitution to the true principles of Republican government. Three parts were supposed to be and were in number one, and three parts were in number two. But all of number two, volume number two, except for these last two essays, were in part number four. So five and six are included in number 85.
Okay, so let's just break this down then. You said there's six volumes, is that right?
Six parts. Six parts that were given to us in the original, in essay number one, okay, by Publius.
And what's the number on, do you remember, on part number one?
Part number one is called The Utility of the Union, and it has three, that's the first volume that Hamilton broke it down into when he published it as books and not just newspaper articles.
Okay. And what numbers are those?
Those are numbers one, two, and three, and they go from essay number one through essay number 36.
There we go. Essay number one through essay number 36.
Yeah, and broken down into three parts.
Okay, great. And then,
So volume two goes through 37 through 85.
Okay. So there's two volumes.
There's two volumes.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
So with three parts in each of them, and so we've covered only one of the three parts, and now we're going to cover the two parts in the last one of our essays.
Which was 84, and now we're to 85.
We're at 85.
Okay.
And so 85, the last two parts, part number five is the conclusion, including the Constitution's analogy to your own state constitution. And number six, lastly, the additional security, which is the adoption will afford to the preservation of that Republican species of government, to liberty, and to property.
Okay.
Okay. So this one, the last essay, number 85, contains Publius's final plea for ratification of the Constitution. And we will talk about that when we go to that part of it. So I don't want to give that one away yet. Okay. And so we said, according to the formal division, this is Publius speaking again, according to the formal division of the subjects of these papers announced in my number one, my first essay, there would appear still to remain for discussion two major points. One, just what I said, the analogy of the proposed government to your own state constitution, and two, the additional security in which its adoption will afford to Republican government, to liberty, and to property. But these heads have been so fully anticipated and exhausted in the progress of the work that it would now scarcely be possible to do anything more than to repeat in a more dilated form what has been heretofore said, which the advanced stage of the question and the time already spent upon it conspire to forbid. So in other words, this is going to be really short and sweet. It says, so number one, again, the analogy of the proposed constitution of state government or state constitution, is remarkable that the resemblance of the plan of the convention to the act which organizes the government of this state holds not less with regard to many of the supposed defects than to the real excellence of the former. So that's just a really quick summary of what he gives to that first part, the analogy. And to the second, he says, the additional security to Republican form, to liberty, and to property to be derived from the adoption of the plan under consideration consists chiefly in the restraints which the preservation of the Union will impose
on local faction and insurrection, which you spoke of earlier, on the ambition of powerful individuals in single states who might acquire credit and influence enough from leaders and favorites to become the despots of the people, in the prevention of extensive military establishments which could not fail to grow out of wars between the states in a disunited situation, if that means if we don't all come together for in the unity under this Constitution. So he talks about that, and he says, thus have I, fellow citizens, executed the task I have assigned to myself. With what success your conduct must determine. I trust at least you will admit that I have not failed in the assurances I gave you respecting the spirit with which my endeavors should be conducted. I have addressed myself purely to your judgments and have studiously avoided those asperities which are too apt to disgrace political disputants of all parties. No advocate of the measures can be found who will not declare as the sentiments of the system, though it be not perfect in every part, is upon the whole a good one. It is the best that the present views and the circumstances of the country will permit, and is such a one as promised every species of security which a reasonable person can desire. I answer in the next place that I should esteem it the extreme of imprudence to prolong the precarious state of our national affairs and to expose the Union to the jeopardy of successive experiments of the chimerical pursuit of a perfect plan. I shall never, and this is what he says in the conclusion of this, I shall never expect to see a perfect work from imperfect man.
Uh-huh.
And so there he talks about this, and he says that when he does this, he says in his concluding statement is, a nation without a national government, in my view, is an awful spectacle. The establishment of a constitution in time of profound peace by the voluntary consent of the whole people is a prodigy, to the completion of which I look forward with trembling anxiety.
Trembling anxiety, huh?
Trembling anxiety.
Wow.
So this is what he talks about. He says, with this is not perfect. And he said, you would be wrong. He said, the zeal for attempts to amend prior to the establishment of the Constitution must abate in every man who is ready to accede to the truths of the following observations. Any writer in here, he's talking about a writer of old, and he says, to balance a large state or society, says he, this writer, whether monarchical or republican, on general laws, is a work of so great difficulty that no human genius, however comprehensive, is able by the mere dint of reason and reflection to effect it. The judgment of many must unite in the work. Experience must guide their labor. Time must bring it to perfection, and the feeling of inconvenience must correct the mistakes which they inevitably fall into in their first trials and experiments.
Wow.
So that's the conclusion of the Federalist Papers.
So before we go to break, we've just finished this. And first of all, I find it amazing how they write.
I do too.
Just the vocabulary. And many times I think our young people have been told that these are, you know, these were just, you know, uneducated slaveholders or whatever. These were men who really grappled with big ideas. And we stand on the shoulders of these giants. We have a responsibility to understand what it was that they were grappling with, what they have given us. And Ben, we do this show because it seems that the American idea, the Constitution, people don't really know it. They pull it out, like on this impeachment thing, they pull out different quotes from the Constitution and want to act like they revere it. But they don't. And that is why we do this show, is so that we can engage in the battle of ideas.
I think you're so right in that, Kim, and that is so important. And when you read this, this is called the language of statesmanship. And many times when they speak, it's difficult because they'll use double negatives rather than to come out and really affront someone that has a different idea. And if you go back to the first of the essays that were written by Publius, not only does he talk about the great question, which we'll mention again here, but in that, and he gives the outline of what will come with the Federalist Papers, but he talks about moderation in there. And he says, you know, you can't just assume because somebody opposes you that they are evil people.
Ah.
He says, so you have to listen to what they're saying, and you have to consider it before rejecting it, because you might approve it. And you can't assume that because they are saying something in opposition to you that they're evil people, or they have evil intent. You know, he said, you have to understand and we have to listen. And so that's what he's talking about when he starts that. So the other big thing that is repeated over and over again in different ways in the first essay is to exercise moderation in your consideration of this.
Okay, but there has to be intellectual honesty. You may disagree, but there has to be intellectual honesty. And then what we see it happen so many times here in America now is that, oh, you know, if you push and may make good points, instead of somebody, you know, really deliberating and debating the idea to try to get to truth, they may throw their hands up and say, we just agree to disagree. That's not what these guys did.
No.
They went to a point where they got to agreement, but it was through deliberation and debate versus coercion and manipulation.
And that's the truth. And these two guys were two of the key players in the convention. And there was many discussions, if you will. There were many debates. Very robust discussions, very robust debates. Big arguments, sometimes almost breaking up the convention. But they went through, they sat there in the hot summer of 1787 in Philadelphia with horseflies biting them through their stockings to go through and do this. And they didn't have air conditioning, and because of the security, they had to keep the windows closed. So they didn't have breezes in there. But they fought through all this stuff with very heated arguments to come to a compromise. And that's what we talk about in here, is that our Constitution, our proposed Constitution, was a bundle of compromises.
Aha. Okay, well, let's go to break.
Okay.
We have one more segment, and we will actually wrap this whole thing up for the year. And we've got something very exciting planned for next year as well, but we'll just keep that as a cliffhanger. So this is Kim Munson. Ben Martin is in studio with me, patriotic historian. We'll be right back.
Award-winning realtor Karen Levine has 30 years of experience with RE/MAX Alliance. As a director with the National Association of Realtors, Karen Levine works to protect private property rights. Karen Levine believes in home ownership. Because of Karen's love of dogs, Karen volunteers with GRR, Golden Retriever Rescue of the Rockies, helping golden retrievers find their forever homes. Choose Karen Levine to buy or sell your home because she understands that it's more than just a house. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine with RE/MAX Alliance today at 303-877-7516. That's 303-877-7516.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
You want to succeed, so you need to dress for the job, event, or relationship that you seek. For more than 30 years, entrepreneur and stylist Kim Munson has been helping women look their very best. And guys, Kim can help you with made-to-measure shirts that fit great and you'll love to wear. Guys and gals, if you want to up your game, freshen your look, email kim@kimmunson.com for your initial style consult. Kim@kimmunson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
This is country, land of my birth.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. In studio with me is Ben Martin, patriotic historian, former Army Ranger, expert on the Federalist Papers and our founding. And this is it. This is the last segment this year on the Federalist Papers. So let's wrap this up, Ben Martin.
Okay, so let's do a little summary on this, Kim. And I want to talk about a few general points here. And the first thing I want to talk about is the greatness of these papers to start off with. And I want to say that I'm going to use two quotes here. Thomas Jefferson described the Federalist Papers in 1788 as the best commentary on the principles of government which ever was written.
Wow.
And I think he's right about that, especially our government. And then Clinton Rossiter, who was the editor of the book that we use as our number one reference, writing in 1961, acknowledged the Federalist as the most important work in political science that has ever been written or is likely to ever be written in the United States. It is indeed the one product of the American mind that is rightly counted among the classics of political theory. So to talk about that, what the importance of it was, the purpose of what the Federalist Papers were, their original purpose of these papers, the Federalist Papers are a series of 85 essays which were initially published in the New York newspapers between 27 October 1787 and May of 1788. The ultimate purpose of the Federalist Papers was to convince the people of New York to ratify the newly framed and proposed Constitution by expounding the merits of the new Constitution and to answer the objections to it, which we had just talked about, those miscellaneous objections. However, after they were published in New York, they were adopted by the supporters of the Constitution in other states to help them convince their people to ratify the Constitution there. The authors of these papers, as we have all talked about before, they were published anonymously. They were written anonymously by Alexander Hamilton, James Madison, and John Jay under the pen name Publius Valerius Publicola, one of the founders and saviors of the Republic of Rome. Publius firmly established the Roman Republic, which endured and expanded for centuries. Publius had remained in Rome in order to serve as consul, which is like the president, to improve at a critical moment the city's primitive republican laws and to impact his own spirit in moderation, justice, and wisdom to the regime. Publico, his nickname, means lover of people. To let you know that. And he was considered a great counsel. The greater purpose achieved by these papers, the great accomplishment of the Federalist Papers was to show that the Constitution was both coherent and republican. There we go again with republican. Hamilton, Madison, and John Jay undertook the series of essays in order to expound the merits of the new Constitution and to answer the objections to it. Federalists showed that the Constitution contained an inherent constitutionalism and gave a purpose to the whole document and to each of its parts, those six parts we talked about. To put it differently, the Federalists articulated the overall integrity of the Constitution, showing how it fit the requirements of republican government as a whole. The Federalists thus interpreted the Federal Convention as having been a forum not for self-interested bargaining, but for public-spirited deliberation. The product of those deliberations was a, quote-unquote, fundamental law, sufficiently rational and coherent to be regarded almost as the product of a single wise mind. The U.S. Constitution, unlike the laws of many ancient cities, was not the work of one wise mind, a point the Federalist emphasizes. In fact, Publius quickly became accepted as the best guide not only to how the framers had understood the Constitution when they wrote it, but also how the people of the United States had understood the Constitution when they ratified it.
The people of the United States had understood the Constitution when they ratified it.
Right.
Maybe we should turn the TV off here in 2020
reading.
and start reading.
I agree with you. In Democracy Versus Republic, he said, because we talk about all that all the time, and I see that misused all the time, a good deal more than half of the total Federalist Papers is devoted to the subject of Republican government. The Federalist Papers is comprised of 85 essays divided into two volumes with three parts in each volume for a total of six parts. The average number of papers of essays in each volume is 7.4 essays. The fourth part, entitled The Conformity of the Proposed Constitution to the True Principles of Republican Government, is comprised of 48. This is 6.5 times more essays than the average number in any other parts. And 48 papers is also a good deal more than half of the other parts combined, with a total of 36.
Hey, Ben, how long did it take them to write this? So because this was appearing in newspapers, right? So what was the time frame?
It was less than a year. It started in October of 87, and it ended in May of 88.
Wow.
It's amazing that they got those. Sometimes there were three or four written in 1 week. And other times there were just one or two, but they really did a lot. And this is their minds thinking, when you read this stuff, how deep all of this is, how could they do it so fast? And I want to say a few more things about this in the democracy. And it says that in Essay 10, the most famous and most often quoted of all the essays, Publius compares a democracy to a republic. Democracies have ever been spectacles of turbulence and contention, have ever been found incompatible with personal security or the rights of property, and have in general been as short in their lives as they have been violent in their deaths. And it is so great. And then in essay number 55, the number of legislatures, when we talk about a democracy, we talk about the two great points of difference between a democracy and a republic, or first, the delegation of the government in the latter to a small number of citizens, which are elected by the rest, a small number. And he says, secondly, the greater number of its citizens in the greatest sphere of the country over which the latter may be extended. And that's a really key point. And so in 55, he talks about that number. And he said the number of legislatures ought at most to be kept within a certain limit in order to avoid the confusion and intemperance of a multitude in all very numerous assemblies. And that's what you get in a democracy when everybody comes in to vote. In all of these numerous assemblies of whatever character composed, passion never fails to wrest the scepter from reason. Had every Athenian citizen been a Socrates, every Athenian assembly, democracy, would still have been a mob.
Wow.
That's in 55. And so, and he says that on 17 September 1789, after the framers had approved and signed the Constitution, Ben Franklin, the American sage, was leaving Independence Hall when Elizabeth Powell, the wife of Philadelphia's mayor, asked him, "What kind of government have you delegates given us?"
A republic, if you can keep it.
Yes.
So, and what year was that? Was that 1787?
That was 1787.
1787, okay.
In September 17th. 1787, we call Constitution Day.
A republic, if you can keep it.
A republic, madam, if you can keep it. So I talked to you and I said that I'm going to talk about a couple of things. So I want to talk again about this great question that comes up in number one. Okay, and he says, it has been frequently remarked that it seems to have been reserved to the people of this country by their conduct and example to decide the important question, whether societies of men are really capable or not of establishing good government from reflection and choice, or whether they are forever destined to depend for their political constitutions on accident and force. And that is so important. And then we talk about in number 14, in the conclusion of the first part, happily for America, happily we trust for the whole human race, they pursued a new and more noble course. They accomplished a revolution which has no parallel in the annals of human society. They reared the fabrics of government which have no model on the face of the globe. They form the design of a great Republican government, which is the incumbent upon their successors to improve and perpetuate. And then he talks about, in 22, I wanted to say that, the fabric of the American government, the fabric of the American Republic, ought to rest on the solid basis of the consent of the people. The streams of national power ought to flow from that pure original fountain of all legitimate authority.
Ben Martin, thank you. This has been quite a ride this year, and I so appreciate it. Thank you to the Harris family, and we've got some exciting things planned for next year. But to go through the Federalist Papers, this has been awesome. We need to know why we believe what we believe, what is so amazing about this whole American idea. So, Ben Martin, I wish you and yours a very blessed 2020.
You too. I think we're making progress.
We're making progress, for sure. And Alexander Hamilton, he said, I shall never expect a perfect work from imperfect man. We got pretty darn close, didn't we?
They did.
That's for sure. So today, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. I wish each of you a very blessed 2020. Put your seatbelts on. We've got a lot to do. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America.